All right, coming up on 405 on KMOX, DGS on a Friday. Dave and Rach are out. We're talking baseball in the middle of all this. I mean, we've been planning this for a little while to have some couple of baseball Fridays, if you will, right? Where we've got today set up where obviously Bernie's with us until 4:45 and been hanging out since 3 o'clock. We had Ricky Horton in earlier, Brendan Schaefer from 2 to 3. Matt Pauly's in with us now. So we've got the early version of the Redbird Rush Hour, because normally it's all three of us in the 5 o'clock on Fridays. It's just going to be the 4 o'clock hour today. And then next Friday, we're going to be out at Patio's, guys. The DGS crew, all of us will be out at Patio's for a couple of hours before Cards Cubs game one. So we're having some fun. We're having extra fun with the Cardinals because, guys, they've been extra fun so far this year, right? Better than we all expected.
Much better, right? Like, just incredibly better. And it's been, we're still doing the thing of how long is this going to last? But I think, somebody brought up, I was doing Gas House Gang today, and I didn't go check the numbers, but I assume this is right. Somebody made the point that the Cardinals' record right now is actually only one game better than where they were at this exact same moment last year. Because you remember last year, they had the incredible May. I can go back, check the numbers, but even if that's not totally right,
it's close.
It's in the same neighborhood. But, and maybe I'm a prisoner of the moment, this feels different than even when they were winning so much last year in May. It felt like there was a higher percentage chance of the bottom falling out of it, where this, I don't know if they're going to continue at this pace, but it feels like there's something real that's going. It's a window that is starting to open, as opposed to one that may be open for just a split second.
Yeah, it's really interesting to look at the vibes difference, right? Like the overall is not that much different. Now, keep in mind that last year, part of what we have in our head is what followed May, right? We have June, July, August, September. We have that in our head. So we haven't gotten to that yet. But if you were to just do vibes check, on a vibes check, this year feels different.
Yeah. I mean, and just being, I'm in that clubhouse almost every day, when the team is at home, I can tell you that it is, the vibes are good. The vibes are good for sure.
You feel the same way, Byrne, that even though it's maybe not as different on the record as we would think at the same time of year, it just feels different.
Yeah, it does, because it's a new era. You have some veterans that were here and such a huge part of the scene and huge part of the culture and huge part of everything. They're not there now. And so there was a void, so to speak, in that, a lot of the young guys have stepped up and sort of like, hey, this is our team now. Let's go. It's really kind of created like an extra energy or a different kind of energy, because it's pretty cool when you have a bunch of young players who are very hungry and they love being Cardinals, but they really want to take charge of this thing and they want to make it their own. They don't really want to feel like they have to follow anyone else. They want to all do this together, but they want to, some of these young guys want to take the lead, and this is really, really healthy. And I think that this is, I think that really reflects on how hard they play and the fact that they're so relentless and the fact that they never give up and they just keep coming at you. They have an attitude and it's great. See, this is what's wonderful. I think if you have the right kind of young players, they got to be the right kind of guys. But if you do, what they bring to a situation like this, a new era of baseball, I mean, it's pretty powerful and it's definitely very cool.
Yeah, things are different in this city when the Cardinals are playing not just good baseball, but meaningful baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably how I would separate out last year to this year. Last year wasn't meaningful what they did in May. This year, even if they fall off a little bit, even if they're not a playoff team, what they're doing right now is meaningful because it is the start of something. So when there is something meaningful going on over there at Busch Stadium, it just lifts up the entire city. And it's so much more fun just to exist in this city when that's happening.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, let me throw something at you guys, because I've been thinking about this and I haven't picked a side yet, because I'm not sure there's enough evidence to pick a side. But I'm curious what you guys, again, feel free to take that same approach to the question. So when you look at real performance, you're right, runs scored, runs allowed, ERA, batting average. Like, when you look at all of that and then you compare it to the expected totals, the offense matches. Their expected numbers match what their production is. They're, 10th, 11th, 12th, in runs and home runs and all that. And that's where they fit with kind of the expected numbers. The pitching staff is okay with the real numbers, but the expected ERA is 29th in Major League Baseball, you know, maybe 28th. It's near the bottom. So my question is on the pitching side. Where is your guys' vibes check when it comes to which one of those is more likely to carry more weight? Will the expected numbers get better, you know, by throwing a few more strikes here and there, by minimizing hard contact a little bit? Probably not going to lead to a lot more strikeouts, but there are things you can do where those things will get better. Or is it more likely that that will carry the gravity and pull the regular numbers down a little bit?
Well, first of all, you know, it's funny because the timing's really great for this question, at least where I sit, because I actually did a lot of work on this today. I was curious.
I did not know that. And, good.
Yeah. And you know, the thing of it is what I found out about the Cardinals hitting, I said, listen, some of their underlying metrics that indicate, you know, is there anything fundamentally they're not doing as well this month that they did well last month? And well, first of all, they need to walk more. But I'm talking about the actual swing decisions, mm-hmm. actual contact stuff. You know, it's all pretty healthy. They're not squaring the ball up as well as they did the first month. There's that ideal attack angle,
right,
and
right.
I apologize to people who don't like the fancy pants stuff. That number's dropped some, so there's some stuff that's dropped down where they're not quite getting the hard contact that they were last month. But overall, the checkup, they're fine. The patient looks fine. Let's just say they're like the patient has a head cold or something, right?
Right.
Okay. Now the pitchers, listen, I got to be honest with you. The pitching stuff is a concern, and you know, it's like, can we trust this to last? And I'm not trying to be negative. I appreciate the way these guys have gone at it, but listen, this pitching staff as a whole, they've yielded the highest contact rate on strikes in the majors.
Mm-hmm.
They've been struck with the second highest contact rate overall, the hard hit rate against Cardinals pitchers, highest in the major leagues. They've been blasted for 587 balls that left the bat at 95 plus miles an hour. Second highest in Major League Baseball. The average exit velocity against St. Louis pitchers, third highest in the majors. Only two major league pitching staffs have allowed more balls, batted balls in fair territory than the Cardinals. They have as a staff, they have the lowest strikeout rate, lowest swing and miss rate. Like I said in something that I was writing, you know, it's kind of a Molotov cocktail sitting there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
No, I mean, again,
I agree.
Like when a Michael McGreevy, for example, was pitching really, really well, I got tired of, you know, the stat geeks, and I'm a stat geek,
yep.
But I got tired of them with the, well, his expected stats. So it's, well, I'm watching him pitch and he looks like he's pitching good. But in the last couple starts, but especially the other night, we saw how fragile that can be because the margin for error between getting a ground ball and getting a rocket mm-hmm. hit off you. It's really, they don't have a margin for error. And that, as someone who wants them to do great, but I also live in the real world, this is going to be really hard to pull off all year.
It really is. Let me play a little bit of devil's advocate with you, Bernie, and it's specific to Michael McGreevy. I don't think this applies to people other than McGreevy. He was very unhappy with the way he performed in his last start. He gave up 10 hits, which is a ton of hits.
Five innings is a lot.
I'm not dismissing the 10 hits that he gave up, but he was able to battle through and he gave up 3 runs. We'll see if it gets worse for McGreevy, but that's going to be the worst type of performance we see from McGreevy.
Well,
five innings and 3 runs. I can handle that.
Well, number one, there was a reason why he had so much trouble the other night. I mean, he went into that game with one of the highest first pitch strike rates in Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. The other night, he couldn't land the first pitch strike, so it left him vulnerable. See, and that's the type of thing. That's what I'm talking about with a thin margin for error.
Right.
The other thing, I love Michael McGreevy, and you know, with all due respect, I don't think you need to defend Michael McGreevy to me. I think the world of him, but I also understand his last two starts, for example, 23 hard hit balls, and he did not have more than 7 hard hit balls against him in any other start before the last two. The last two averaged about 12 hard hit balls per start. So that tells me it's like, oh man, this is a it's kind of dangerous. Kind of dangerous. It's, you know, you're kind of flirting with some rough stuff there. Again, very thin line between success and not failure, but success and not doing too well.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say too that his control factor, the fact that he doesn't walk people, allows him to defy some of those things a little bit. Absolutely. When it comes to production. I don't know that exists for the other pitchers.
No.
The other starters specifically. Right. Because they don't have the command that he does.
Yeah, and that's why when I pushed back a little bit, it was specific to McGreevy. And Bernie, I kind of chuckle now because when you combine the last two starts together, there were so many people who were really upset that McGreevy got pulled after six innings ago at 74 pitches. And Ollie was the first person to mention in the postgame show or in his postgame media conference about the hard hits. And then you see more of a representation of what that looks like in his next start where he gives up the 10 hits. So just being very aware of it, knowing that McGreevy absolutely can control some things because of his pinpoint accuracy. Right. But to Kevin's point, when you go beyond McGreevy, that conversation kind of stops right there.
And Matt, real quick, and because I know we're up on a break here, but I want to circle back. I agree with what you said, your takeaway. I do agree with it. Which is like, if that's, for lack of a better term, if that's is kind of his lowest form or his lowest quality of start, if that's his really bad one, that's okay. He's going to be okay. But it just shows you how things can get away a little bit when he doesn't land those first pitch strikes and he's locating in a way where they're hitting the ball harder off of him. You know, so I'm just concerned in that regard. I love the guy.
Yeah, and for everybody listening, like what we're talking about is a concern, not a prediction.
Right.
We're not forecasting doom. We're saying, hey, this has been pretty good. How do you maintain it? And what I want to get into next, we come back on the other side of this, and obviously Bernie Miklas, Matt Pauly, Kevin Wheeler hanging out with you here on DGS. Dave and Rach are out. On the other side of it, let's think about it during the break, guys, because I think the other side of it is maybe this is the stuff that if it starts to show up in games, maybe this is what prods them to go for a little more offense on the position player side as we get going. So obviously a lot of things to balance as we go. We'll touch on that coming up next here on KMOX. All right, DGS on a Friday, but it's a baseball DGS. Dave and Rach are out. You got Bernie Miklas, Matt Pauly, Kevin Wheeler with you here. So our normal Friday rush hour sports is just earlier today since we're hanging out. And then Bernie will stay till about 4:45, and then we'll wrap it all up and get back to rush hour and sports open line tonight. All right, so I posed the question to you guys before the break, and we had a chance to think about it a little bit. We just talked about the potential.
I was supposed to be thinking during the break.
You didn't have to. Okay. It's optional. This isn't college, man. I'm not grading you. We talked about the pitching and the potential problems that could come up if the team doesn't improve on it, you know, lowering the hard contact rate, things like that. And I asked, could that, if the pitching starts to slip, could that lead the team to start making lineup decisions that are more based on offense rather than defense? And I'm just curious if you guys think that's the case.
Matt, I'll be brief on this. Yeah, it would make sense, but it leads to the next question. It's like, well, who? Like, where do you turn to upgrade
the
offense?
I mean, like that brings our Crooks conversation up.
Right.
Maybe.
If they're not going to bring up Crooks, who could, like we were talking about earlier.
Right.
Who absolutely could fit into a designated hitter role where they move that job around anyway, and also work him in some at catcher. There would be enough action there to get his bat in the lineup at a reasonable amount. But who else? I'm looking forward to seeing what Brian Torres can do, because Matt Pauly and I, and Wheels, I think you too, we've been saying, what does a guy have to do to get a chance at the big leagues? And they did put him on the 40-man roster. And I'm really looking forward to seeing him play, and I hope that he does play. They just promoted him from Memphis. But, and Baez isn't ready, so I just wonder where's the change in offense going to come from in terms of personnel. You know, I really don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what line you have to cross in the season for you to say, okay, at this point this season, there is some value to it, and it's not about going out and trading your prospects to make the team better. But I think we can all agree that some version of Nelson Velasquez, Blaze Jordan, Jimmy Crooks, like some,
and eventually Newt.
Some version of those guys are going to give you more offense than what you're getting right now. Maybe not all of them. Maybe Blaze Jordan shows up at some point and he looks the way Cesar Prieto looks right now.
Right.
Then you just kind of wash your hands of the situation. I think, yeah, it's, I don't know when you cross that line where you have to make those kind of tough decisions, but at some point in time, this season hopefully will matter enough that you do make those kind of decisions, right, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
To your original question, Kevin, and this goes to Bernie's point, there's nobody on the bench that I'm just going,
No. I mean calling people up.
I don't think there's any lineup decisions with the current roster outside of seeing what Brian Torres. I hope Brian Torres gets run out there every single day here for the foreseeable future. See what you got. And if he looks like Prieto or whoever else, well, you know what? He's on the 40-man roster. Maybe you make the decision that he's the guy that you don't really have a spot for anymore, because Newt Barr's going to take a 40-man spot. He's on the 60-day.
Yeah, right.
So you are going to have a 40-man decision to make at some point in the next 2 weeks.
Yep.
And Wills and Matt, I don't know what to expect from Newt, but yeah, it's weird. He's been gone for so long that I like even forgot to mention him, which is dumb on my part. But no, I'm glad you mentioned Blaze Jordan, because again, I'm not saying, listen, we all got caught up in the Luke and Baker thing.
Yeah.
But Blaze Jordan's got really good plate discipline. He walks a lot. And
he doesn't strike out.
Right. He does not strike out. And he's a right-handed bat that can play third or first. And you've got left-handed hitters at both of those positions. So there would be a role. In theory, there would be a role for him, you know, up on the big club. So, but I think it's going to have to come from Jimmy Crooks. They got to try to find a way to wedge him in. But I just get this underlying feeling, like a vibe, that they're just not all that interested in that. And it's kind of bewildering to me, quite frankly.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long-running thing with the team. And we'll see, you know, how much it changes as this year goes along, to lean into defense whenever there's a problem. But when there's a problem with hitting, I'm not sure leaning into defense is going to solve that particular problem. Bernie Miklas still with us till 5 o'clock. Matt Pauly, you go get some rest, buddy, because you still got Redbird Rush Hour and Sports Open Line coming up. Thanks for popping in.
You bet.
All right, more with Bernie coming up after the news. At 4:38 on KMOX, DGS going on today. No Dave, no Rach. They're both out. Dave will be back next Friday. Rach will be back on Tuesday. Bernie Miklas kind enough to hang out with us for a couple of hours today talking ball. It was great to have Brendan Schaefer in earlier. Obviously, Matt Pauly was with us there. Ricky Horton a little bit earlier. Still got our Dave Murray hit. It's been a really busy day. And still talking baseball. We'll go to Redbird Rush Hour, by the way, here at the top of the hour, and then Sports Open Line after that. Bern, you were texting me earlier, and I think this is a great topic. I want to bring it up because you texted me about Riley O'Brien, and it's been a little rough lately, and he's been such a big part of the bullpen being held together. I mean, he, you know, up until the last handful of appearances was basically untouchable. And yeah, there's a little bit of concern now. So what do you make of the struggles here? What's he had? Three rough outings in the last five or so?
Well, I didn't break it down. Sorry, I'm having every now and then I get a stammering problem.
Oh no,
I had a hard time with that. Anyway, I didn't break it down along those lines, but I wanted to do the forensics and what has changed with his pitching, because it's been incredibly dramatic.
Yeah,
in terms of the difference. I mean, the first 13 appearances of the year, he was like virtually perfect. I mean, he didn't allow a run. He did not walk a batter. It was like 15 strikeouts, no walks.
Yeah.
I think he maybe hit one guy. But his last 13 appearances, it isn't just like in a few of those, you know, he really got lit up. But it's just some of the trends that I was able to identify that went into that, and I have it in front of me, and it won't take much time to go through it. So, but I want everyone to pay attention to this, because I'm a little stunned that it hasn't gotten more attention,
mm-hmm.
And that's why I dig into these things. So, Riley O'Brien, his last 13 appearances, has got a 7.45 ERA, and here's what's gone into that over the last 13 appearances. I'll go slow because I want to rattle this off stuff, but I want people to be able to pick it up. 15% drop in his whiff swing rate. a 12% drop in his strikeout rate, a 13% increase in his walk plus hit by pitch rate, a 21, this is on his sinker, by the way. This is his sinker, which is his pitch. 21% drop in ground ball rate, 8.6% increase in average exit velocity against him, 19% increase in terms of hard hit rate against him on the sinker. And this one, I want you to comment on specifically, a loss of 5 inches on the vertical drop on his sinker.
Oh boy.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't kind of, listen, man, I know some people listening are saying, Bernie, you know, quit being a chicken little. I'm not being a chicken little. I'm just saying, I wanted to find out, okay, well, what's gone wrong here? I wanted to do the inspection. And by the way, his changeup is still really good. The sinker is just getting crushed wheels. You know what they're hit? You know, in these 13 games, you know what they've hit? You know what they've hit against his sinker? 480.
Wow.
So this isn't just a little thing. Can he regroup? I hope so. But Wheels, what do you make of this isn't just a little downturn. I mean, this is like a huge decline, at least over the last 13 games. Does that indicate, I had a pitching coach tell me, well, you know, he might be hurting. It might be arm fatigue. Mm-hmm. I had a pitching coach tell me, you know, when I watch the game, I don't see him finishing his pitches when that sinker the way he used to. So what do you think's going on, brother?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, it can be a number of things. There was a period of time there, Byrne, and it was probably right around the beginning of this time frame you're talking about, where he got worked pretty hard.
Well, he did.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I kind of wonder, you know, given his history and given, look, he's not been a closer very long. You know, he saved 6 games last year. You know, he won the job this year once he was kind of up to speed after a little delay in spring training. But it can be as simple as growing pains. He hasn't done this before, and he got worked pretty hard there for a little bit. And this is him just kind of adapting to or learning how to adapt on the fly. It could be that he's just not – his mechanics are off a little, and it's flattening out the sinker, which is a big deal, right? I mean, the difference you described can be the difference between hitting the barrel and getting a ground ball. So, yeah, I think it can be anything. The question in my head that I can't answer is, when does he get out of it?
Yeah, and I did a comprehensive column on this early in the week. People can go find it at stlsportscentral.com. And to your point, and I did bring it up, this started with that laborious blown save against Seattle on April the 25th. That was 39. Remember the 39 pitch?
Yeah.
You know, he was in the eighth and the ninth.
Yep.
He came back on May the 2nd. He threw 26 pitches, gave up 2 runs, a difficult closeout, but he did get the save against the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. On May the 10th, he had 31 pitches, the blown save loss at San Diego. Tuesday, May 19th, this week, 22 pitches. So he's had a lot of high pitch appearances starting April 25th. And that was the one thing I wondered. I said, listen, is Ali overdoing it with him? And then I said, listen, I'm trying to be fair here because I looked to last year and Ali used him like 8-9 times, like 2 innings, maybe 12-13 times were more than an inning. So Ali had a reason to believe that, hey, he's pretty durable.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think Ali did anything wrong, but I think now they got to look at maybe – does it make sense to kind of back off that? Does he need to regenerate?
Yeah, it's a great question.
It's very interesting.
Because right before the outing you hit, right? That right before that game on the 25th, he pitched 5 times in 7 days.
Wow.
Now again, no blame on the team. You're in save situations, you're winning games, and he's doing the job. Like, that's not a complaint. It's just more an observation. And he's typically not been a guy that works that much. And I just wonder if that kind of set off what we're talking about. I don't know that for sure. It's just, you know, you look at a guy, he pitched on the 14th, 15th, 18th, 19th, and 21st leading into the 25th. But he also had 2 days off before he pitched on the 25th. So, you know, I'm just throwing out a potential explanation for what got the ball started. Yeah.
And it's to the anonymous pitching coach that told me, he said, I just don't think he's finishing well. And usually that can be related to fatigue or, sure. you know, maybe yeah. he's hurting a little. One thing that he told me, and then I went to look this up in the data, he's leaving that sinker. And this is a sign of not finishing. Mm-hmm. Like he had, when he was going great, he was landing that sinker where hitters couldn't touch it, or it was in the shadows where they chased it a little bit. The sinkers that he's leaving over the heart of the strike zone during yep. this bad stretch, it's up like 12-13%.
Yep. And those get hit. Yep.
Right. So
completely.
I just wanted to draw, you know, some attention to it because this is kind of a big deal, dude.
Yes, it is.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.